But we somehow persuaded this, telling the man we'd never tell where we got it. But it, I never did feel that one never felt in those days that you were that we were really deprived in any way. It really wasn't until later, or if one went over to say Dublin, which with lights on, and really saw a fully stocked fully stocked shop, that you realized how light things were back home, back in UK. But we were adequately clothed and both in uniform and in mufti, and seemed to be able to get shoes without any difficulty. And of course, prices in those days were the pound I guess was $5 Canadian, and even then the price differential struck Canadians as being very much in their favor. The cost of clothing, the cost of haberdashery generally, chocolate bars, even beer was cheaper than we'd remembered it back home in Canada.
Now the RAF had certain perks. Now did you receive double duty there, like you were getting Canadian wages?
Yeah.
Did you get the RAF perks as well, or was
no.
it only with people stationed with RAF squadron?
I'm not sure what perks you're talking about, because I was on and off RAF stations regularly. We were paid as a flying officer. I remember as a pilot officer, it was $4.25. Sort of basic pay, $2 flying pay, so you got $6.25 a day, and a flying officer combined got $7 a day. A flight lieutenant leaped to something like $8.50, and that was almost too much money to spend. A squadron leader was $9.75, and when I became a wing commander, it was $12 a day, and when I had command of a squadron, I got $1 a day command pay, and paid literally nothing for room and board, except you had a modest mess bill, a mild contribution to the mess fund. You bought everything. They weren't signing chits in those days. You bought everything over the counter, and I know, but I can't remember what the British equivalent rank by rank was, but it was significantly
yeah.
less.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not aware of any other perks that they got. What perks did you have in mind?
Well, I was thinking of when you went on leave, I believe some philanthropist or whatever gave RAF boys, I don't know, a pound or whatever, whenever they went on leave. And
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
I was told this. I couldn't. That's why I thought I'd
when we were on official leave, we were given a pass, a railway pass.
Mm-hmm.
So your rail fare was paid round trip.
That's standard procedure. I was thinking, this is more just
money
for the RAF boys.
Additional
money, and I guess they may have had better servant bathroom facilities or whatever than the RCF. But I think that's important now. The big question I've got for you. Did you wear one button undone to show that you were bomber command, as opposed to being buttoned right up?
No, well, the one button undone was fighter.
Top button undone?
Top button undone.
But didn't bomber retaliate by the bottom button undone for a while there, or that nonsense gone by the time you...
No, we threatened to wear our flies open, but I don't think we ever did.
Well, I had heard that...
I don't ever remember... And it was a matter of pride when you're in uniform and you were bomber command. You did not wear your you made damn certain that your top button wasn't undone. That was reverse snobbery, I suppose.
Reverse
but
what about the mustaches and things like that, or was that again strictly fighter?
No, heavens no, no.
The mustache tradition.
The mustache in my day in bomber command, since we're doing almost all of our operations at the beginning at night, I remember getting a medical lecture, or was it medical myth? I can't remember. but the theory was that if you shaved your upper lip, it affected your night vision. And I believed it. I believed it. It may be true. I don't know, but I certainly believed at the time. And I grew a mustache that I never did take off.
So we're both okay for night vision, then, eh?
I think you could operate blackout down a mine with that amount of hair. But a lot of mustaches grow. Yeah, there are some glorious specimens. And that was the birth, and we brought it home. The birth of the RAF mustache, of course. That was a special
mustache. Wax and all
mustache wax. I never did go to the wax, but.
What about I don't know how to phrase this black marketing? Now the Air Force, because of their travel and connections, communications and things, and I don't mean black market in the sense of running some sort of backroom operation, but I'm thinking of small time bringing goods in for the mess and for the squadron and for local friends in town. Was there much of that during your time?
Well, we didn't look upon it. Now we're up in northern England here. Now we never called it black marketing, but okay. We had unlimited supplies, if you like, of cigarettes, and we could order, you know, carton after carton, far more than we needed. And what we tended to do was either give or sell. If there were any RAF around that wanted to do it, strangely enough, they very often didn't like our cigarettes. You know, they were different, but we would sell them a carton for what we paid, which was peanuts, you know, a couple of shillings a carton, or gave it to them, or gave them packages of cigarettes. Canadian parcels coming in, you certainly share it with your crew, and you regularly, if there are any RAF in your barrack block, when I was living in barrack blocks as a flying officer and flight lieutenant, you certainly shared things like cake and cookies and jam and all this sort of thing. And if you stayed at someone's house, you always tried to bring in something for them. Cigarettes were easiest to manage, but they were on tight rations. And if you had any food around, you'd bring a cake in, or we had a goodly supply of a good ration of chocolate bars, and good chocolate bars, or we'd have sweets sent over from home, mm-hmm. and you'd bring that in. I remember. I remember bringing a box of Laura Secord's to my hostess. I think it was up in Scotland. She hadn't seen a box of candies like that since 1939, so it was a big hit. And then I remember bringing a tin of cream corn to someone. And that I thought, I loved corn, and it was in one of my boxes from home, and they really didn't know what to do with it. And they didn't open it at the time. It was tin of cream corn. They didn't open at the time, but you know, I wrote and said, "Now, how did you like the corn?" And I got a very polite, guarded reply. Clearly, they didn't like it at all. So I stopped. I stopped using canned corn as a gift. They didn't eat corn in those days, to any extent, in either England or Scotland or Wales. In fact, to this day, I don't think corn is a very popular vegetable over there. It was fed to cattle, they said.
Yes.
So, thanks very much. I stopped.
Keep it yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But you perhaps did the same thing with clothing. I used to have sweaters and socks, knitted socks and scarves. Just by more than I ever needed. I don't know what sort of.
You needed one white silk one, right?
Well, that again was fighter pilot. We were a more humble, effective, economically efficient crowd. We bomber chaps, very steady.
What about while we're on the social? I think that's all we have time for today. But while we're on the social, how did bomber and fighter squadrons mix when they did? How was it taken, or was it just great, good-hearted rivalry, or was there?
Good-hearted, that would best characterize it. There was no, professional quarreling with them at all. They were in a different league. And indeed, you know, I venture to say most bomber pilots at heart wished to be fighter pilots, and they envied you were sent to bomber command. To my knowledge, very few people volunteered for bomber command.
Yeah,
it was pretty dull work. Whereas the fighter boys, and they were getting flocks of new airplanes, and the mosquitoes were coming in, and the typhoons had arrived by then, and all great glamorous stuff, you see.
All the good stuff. Yeah.
And they were up into the air and back down almost before we could taxi out and take off, sort of thing. You know, we were the lumbering brutes. So it was envy, but I'm sure there were. Stern words and the odd knuckle dust, but where we were in northern Yorkshire, southern County Durham, there really weren't any fighter squadrons close by, so we weren't rivals at, say, local pubs. This was solid bomber command territory up there, and there wasn't that kind of conflict. Few army units around that we mildly tangled with, but pretty good-natured stuff. No riots or anything of this order, and any rivalry that occurred was probably over a gal, and if she happened to have an army husband and he came home while her Air Force friend was about, there was a bit of trouble usually, but that was the.
Well, what about the love life of the squadron? Was there a lot of, what's the phrase, enthusiastic amateurs about?
London was crawling with hookers, no question about that. The big leave centers, places like, say, Bristol or maybe Edinburgh or some of the resort towns, but for the most part, no. A lot of English wives left. Husbands, God, there were cases where husbands left in 1939 and didn't return again until 1945, 46. And a lot of quite young, lonely women with the expected results, with a flock of vigorous, handsome Canadians around and wealthy Canadians. That
didn't hurt.
That didn't hurt. But usually a pub life. And pubs closed at 10:30, I guess, mostly. But of course, the problem was transportation. And if you didn't catch the last bus home, as it were, whether it be a military bus or a civilian bus, you could well have a 2-3 hour walk ahead of you, depending on how far you had ranged on that particular night. Every now and then a crew would be able to buy an automobile and somehow find petrol to run it. And you'd see these little Austins go by with, hell, 8, 10, 15 people in them. How the little old machine ever ran, I don't know. But that was very rare. Very rare indeed. For the most part...
You didn't have your own Jeep.
We didn't have our own Jeeps. As a squadron commander much later on, I had my own staff car and my own Jeep, but that was a different game entirely. When you were straight operational air crew, you walked or rode buses for the most part. Bicycles, a fair number of bicycles.
So this in turn would keep your activities fairly close to base and would restrict...
wide-ranging socializing, yeah.
Yeah.
You had leave, but leave was very short, I must say. You know, a week at a time, even late 44 was the order of the day. The squadrons still weren't overmanned,
by any stretch.
So you were given minimum time off. The medics kept an eye on you, of course, and the doctors were forever. When I was squadron commander, coming in saying, well, you better send old Tom Snapper Jackson off on leave. He's getting a bit twitchy. A medical assessment. So you'd have Tom in, and Tom would say, "No, I'm fit." You know. Meanwhile, he probably had a strange squint to an eye or obviously restless, couldn't look you in the eye, something was wrong. The doctor was right, so you'd send him off. And,
now this isn't to do with the
LNF, lack of moral fiber. No, that would be
Ball, we talked about that last time.
That's right. That was this was a different kettle. Now this was a chap who was quite prepared to continue, but
starting to flip out.
Obviously was under great strain and needed a break. Now you get this fairly often with second tour people having completed one operational tour had gone off to do something else, mm-hmm. and were now back in the squadron, and the thing had finally built up to a point. And there would be cases where you would actually remove a man against his wishes, ostensibly against his wishes, from operations because of pressure.
Could week's leave make a difference?
We thought it did. You know, one hears now that if you're not away for a month, you really don't have a holiday. But that wasn't the game then.
I like that kind of talk about.
Yeah, well, in latter day RCF and Canadian Armed Forces Day, that you were very much encouraged to take more than 2 weeks at a time, more than 2 weeks, and usually it meant 3 weeks of an annual month's leave. Again, medical assessment here, medical influence. That you needed that much for a complete change,
break.
A complete break. And I suppose there's a certain amount of truth to that.
Well, especially under operational condition. I know you're restricted to time. We have to pull the plug on this now, but next time we can meet, we'll pick up Operations 428 and go through your log.
Okay.
And get the operations down and your promotions.
Yes.
And different duties and responsibilities. It's just that, I don't know, I felt today would be a nice package of just the social and the... Some of the...
Right. Yeah. Fine.
Factors and features, I guess we can call it. Thank you, General Edwards. That's super.
Very good.
See you next time.
Very good.